The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the frozen heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our live PID Radio show here on Saturday, the 14th day of February. Happy Valentine's Day, honey.
Yeah, happy Valentine's Day to you, sweetheart.
What do I hear in the background?
I think you've got the audio up on your laptop there. So we're echoing back just a few seconds later.
How about that?
It was so nice hearing your voice once.
I hear it again. I hear me. I hear dead people.
Oh, yes. That annoying lag, as if that annoying lag you sometimes get on Skype isn't enough. Just adding another second or two to it makes it even more distracting.
Let's turn a whole bunch of computers on in here and turn up all the sound. Let's really creep people out.
Let's come in again.
What's that over your shoulder, honey?
I don't know. Is it picture in picture? Are you looking at me virtually?
No, I'm just looking at that thing.
Oh, yes.
Hovering over your left shoulder. What is that?
What is that?
Oh, that's Minnie Moose, my other sidekick. Yep. Yep. Been with me the whole time.
Yes, indeed.
Yes,
Sam
indeed.
Isn't enough. We got the Minnie Moose here. Well, actually, it's a reference to the title of today's show, which is a reference to a news story that came out this week.
Tell them all about it, honey.
Well, it's interesting how science... There was a character that Kevin Nealon played on Saturday Night Live where he would come on to Weekend Update to give an analysis of something. And as he would go through the report, he'd get about he'd get maybe, 30 seconds in and he'd say, well, that's not what I meant to say. Forget what I said. I didn't know what I was talking about then. But here's what I really meant to say. And they keep going on through the whole commentary like that about five or six times where he changes his mind about something and winds up saying exactly the opposite of what he started saying. Essentially, that's what science has come to with the announcement this week that researchers are now proposing that there was no Big Bang that started the universe after all, that as scientists used to believe, it has always been here and always will remain.
Been with us the whole time.
Been with us the whole time.
Just like Minnie Moose.
That's right.
Well, that sort of dovetails into some other stories that I've been seeing, popping up here and there. This idea of dark matter that interconnects everything, that we can't see it, but we can see its effect on other things. The idea that we're living in a matrix. Mm-hmm. That the world around us is created by our, the sum of all our thoughts, the sum of all our dreams, and that we as humanity are actually creating it as we go.
Oh, I see. The law of attraction, basically.
Yeah,
the secret.
Sort of.
We just sort of create our own reality. Huh?
And it also dovetails in with a book I'm reading right now by Malachi Martin, which is The Jesuits.
Yes.
And I've just gotten to the part where John Paul II was trying to take down the Jesuits and one of their big, many failures in his eyes was that they supported the ideas of Teilhard de Chardin.
Ah, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. Mm-hmm. What an interesting fellow. One of the Jesuits who was censured by the Vatican in 1960 and supposedly censured by the Jesuits themselves for his outspoken belief in evolution.
He supposedly.
Was, right.
He had Minnie Moose next to him.
Right there the whole time. Because just like Minnie Moose, now suddenly we get to the 21st century. And look, Teilhard de Chardin has been with us the whole time.
Yeah, we've always believed in him.
Pope Benedict in 2009, in a homily, talked about the glorious vision of Teilhard de Chardin that the earth was to becoming a living host, which in the Roman Catholic catechism, the host is the wafer that's served during communion.
It represents Christ.
Right.
It's a Christ consciousness.
During the miracle of transubstantiation, it literally becomes the body of Christ during the Eucharist, during the communion service. So had a lot more significance than I think a lot of Protestants picked up on, because the word host can have many meanings, from the internet to somebody who's entertaining socially to, in that context,
yeah,
the literal body of Jesus Christ, which is what Teilhard de Chardin proposed, that because evolution has, in his view, that living organisms are constantly evolving in complexity.
We're upgrading.
Yes, and in sentience.
Mm-hmm.
And that ultimately we would become one with the cosmos when we reached the omega point. And the omega point is what he considered to be Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
This has been repackaged, of course, by Ray Kurzweil and his followers as the technological singularity, the point at which we upgrade through technology to become billions of times more intelligent than we are now. But then beyond that, the final stage of history, according to Dr. Kurzweil, is that the cosmos wakes up and we become one with the cosmos.
I know. It'll really drive you crazy if you start to think about it a lot. And I think that's why some of the scientists are now coming out and say, look, we just don't even want to go there. It's always been there.
Yeah.
Been with us the whole time.
Right. If we try to explain a Big Bang, then we have to explain where it came from. Because otherwise, it's like Darwinian evolutionists who claim that they are the rational scientists and we're the science deniers. But they're the ones who claim that inanimate matter willed itself to live.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, nothing suddenly willed itself to become something at the Big Bang.
Yeah.
And scientists apparently don't want to give creationists any ammunition, because we can say, well, yeah, there was a Big Bang. It's like God speaking everything into existence.
It's turtles all the way down. That's
yes.
Why.
So the University of Ethridge in Canada, a researcher there, Soria Das and Ahmed Faraj Ali from the Benha University in Egypt, have suggested that the Big Bang did not mark the beginning of the universe. They say that quantum mechanics suggests that the universe has been around forever. And I wrote the very first song.
But here's the thing. I mean, if we're also seeing, and we are, stories in mainstream science saying that we are very likely living in a computer simulation.
Right, right.
It would appear to us, now, believe me, we are born-again Christians. We believe in Genesis account as written.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just telling you what they, those guys,
That's
are
right.
saying. And that is that we are living in a computer simulation.
Right.
That some distant point in the future that our descendants decide that they are going to run a computer and ancestor simulation to see what was like in certain aspects of history, which leads me to story number one that I want to discuss today, and that is the brand new Mattel Google partnership.
Oh, yes.
For a virtual look at the world.
Oh, yes. This is awesome, because this is like
You would have so loved this.
I know. This one is so cool. And this is the thing that I think gives us a little bit of a unique perspective on the topics that we discuss. Sharon and I have been science fiction fans from way back.
We are such geeks.
And, we see the appeal of the transhumanist movement, because we understand from a science geek, techno geek perspective how appealing it is. But we also understand that it's not where our future lies. But
right.
Boy, when I was a kid, we had one of these toys. And I'm talking about the Mattel Viewmaster.
Ooh.
Oh, that was so cool. Because you got a 3D look at those little things on those slides. And, I remember very clearly as a kid, we had one that was based on some stop-action Ray Harryhausen dinosaur movie. I think it was Ray Harryhausen. It looked like his work, where you had the Brontosaurus back before we knew there was no such thing. It was a Apatosaurus. They put a Camarasaurus skull on a different skeleton, so they got it
Doxysaurus.
Wrong.
Doxysaurus.
No such thing. Yes, Doxysaurus. Yes, the prehistoric Doxysaurus roaming the Jurassic period. And so you could see these things. And as a kid, because I was fascinated with dinosaurs, I thought that was the coolest thing ever. But now Mattel has come out with a new virtual reality Viewmaster.
You know what one of my favorite things? Now, we didn't have one. I had a friend who had one. My friend Reba had one. We would sit there and we would click. There's something that, to this day, I can remember the feel and the sound of advancing those little wheels. That click.
Yeah.
What's going to come next? Click.
And the aggravation if you didn't get the wheel in exactly right.
Oh, yeah. And it didn't look 3D anymore. Well, the new one is, if I understand the sort of promissory note video that was shown at this mass meeting of investors, it was where they take the little wheel mm-hmm. and they set it down on the table, and you got an augmented reality headset that allows you to see using all of the satellite feed and the Google Cars feed that Google has access to. And you can instruct the little wheel and the viewer to show you any point within that location. Might be San Francisco, might be a museum, whatever it happens to be. And they're going to be expensive. Let me tell you this. Mm. A pack of four, I think, were $10. That's a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Just four places to explore, $10.
Yeah, but the ViewMaster itself is not going to be very expensive.
No, and it's sort of like buying a printer because they know you're going to have to buy lots of ink.
Right, or we'll just toss the printer in.
It's useless if you don't have the disc.
Exactly. So the ViewMaster will be about $30, but what they're calling now experience reels will sell for $15 each. And each of these discs will contain four experiences. So when you look at it that way, it's less than $4 per setting. But it is mass marketing virtual reality. Mm-hmm. And this is the beginning of this is the opening of the door that leads to the virtual world that we saw in the science fiction series Caprica, which is sort of the prequel to the reimagined Battlestar Galactica.
Exactly. Augmented reality and virtual reality is where it's all heading. Reality itself is not enough
right.
for today's child.
And where this ultimately leads is, hey, you know, this virtual reality world is so appealing and so cool. And you know, why not be in there all the time?
It's cerebral crack.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, kids, they just want to feed that imagination. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I have, to this day, a vivid imagination. As a child, it was even more so. And,
sure.
And I loved, you know, picturing myself in various, you know, I wanted to be Robin Hood and I wanted to be a doctor and so many various things that I would play those things in my head. I wouldn't necessarily act them out. I'd just be in my head doing it.
Right. But now you can do it and see it in 3D, mm-hmm. participate in 3D real time with this virtual
yeah.
reality.
Oh,
so
yeah.
this is like the Oculus Rift that was introduced by, was it Sony? No, the name of the company is Oculus. So the...
Who bought the Oculus Rift? Was it Google?
No, Google has its own device called the Cardboard, the Google Cardboard, which turns your phone into a sort of inexpensive virtual reality platform. But there was, yeah, the Sony had another device that was similar to the Oculus that is being released. So we're seeing multiple entries in this arena. And isn't it interesting that artificial intelligence, which computer makers back in the 90s and 2000s kind of gave up on, is now being driven by internet giants like Facebook, Google, and
Yahoo?
I guess Facebook and Google would be the two main ones that
Homeland
I think of.
Security?
Amazon as well would be in there.
Homeland Security?
Well, Homeland Security is just sort of tapping into the stream, of course.
Well, they really are going to be tapping into the stream because President Obama is just, he's about to sign legislation saying that is the very thing.
Gons, thank you, Gons. You're right. Facebook bought Oculus. Gons in the chat room.
Well, I knew that they had bid for it, and I didn't know if they actually got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Gons, I will bow to him because he's the guy.
Yeah, but Facebook and Google are, some analysts have said, have basically embarked on the Manhattan Project of artificial intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Well, that's a really good way to put it. And I'd say that they are doing the science behind the metaphysical idea of what Teilhard de Chardin was teaching, this mm-hmm. idea of everything merging into a conscious reality, another realm. Jung may have called the Akashic Field, he believed that we all tap into that and everything is actually governed by this mass consciousness
right.
that we all create. We're all plugged into the Matrix.
Yeah. It was an idea developed by one of the Russian cosmists, Verdansky, called the Noosphere, and then that mm-hmm. was developed by Teilhard de Chardin. Yeah, the idea that this – and Teilhard also was credited with coining the term social network. So some refer to him as the father of the internet just because he came up with the term. Because of our social interaction through Facebook, Twitter, Google+, mm-hmm. and next through these virtual worlds. Because, you know, the next step in this, again, as we move toward this sort of Caprica-like virtual world, is to take these – ViewMasters and Oculus devices and start plugging them into MMORPGs, where you're basically like Second Life, but on steroids, the next generation of Second Life.
And then beyond that, it will have to be something that's internalized because you want to be there 24/7.
Right. Something that allows you to experience the sensations of being there. Not enough to just see it. Then you'll have to be able to feel it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a new contact lens that is out now that allows the wearer. It's actually made for people who have macular degeneration, which means that their central vision is obscured. This allows them to bring objects much closer so that they can actually see them just by winking.
Mm.
It allows up to a 3x max or 4x max magnification of whatever you're looking at. So if I wanted to see you more clearly and I had that problem, I just little wink at you, which I do anyway, and then suddenly you come into focus. I think that's awesome. But when you get someone who has no visual problem and that person simply wants to have eagle eye vision.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I can see this going for soldiers and kids just want to be super cool.
Oh, you better believe that this kind of thing is being developed for the military.
Oh, yeah.
Enhancing their ability to
see,
hear.
The article out yesterday said, oh, no, this is for, you know, people with visual difficulties.
Yeah. And before we get to the Homeland Security stuff, because that is important to get to that and what President Obama is proposing for control of the Internet, there was an interesting article that came out this week at Gizmodo and went viral, written by Zoltan Istvan, the author of The Transhumanist Wager.
And you're going to talk to him on Sunday, are you not?
Yes, that will be next Wednesday's View from the Bunker. The article titled, another article that I pulled from the Daily Mail, but he wrote an article about...
Been with you the whole time.
Yes, the article, this is the one I meant to talk about the whole time, whether or not religions will try to convert artificial intelligence once AI is ultimately developed, if in fact they can develop a truly autonomous AI, would religions try to convert or evangelize such an intelligence? Mm-hmm. And there is at least one gentleman, the Reverend Dr. Christopher Benek from the Presbyterian Church, Providence Presbyterian Church in Florida, said that he doesn't see that Christ's redemption is limited to human beings.
Okay.
I'd say he's
wrong there. Don't
his PhD should be, depending on what it's in, should be revoked.
PhD deleted.
Well, yeah, because you know Christ did come for humans and for our salvation alone. It was not a universal salvation. Yes, we're going to take robots and extraterrestrials, which we don't believe exist, but that's where the Roman Catholic Church
is. The enmity is between the seed of Satan and the seed of man.
Right.
Not the seed of AI.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't say that the seed of man is somehow everything we create.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason that Jesus came and had to fulfill the law and had to be fully human as well as fully God.
Amen.
In order to fulfill the law and then be the perfect sacrifice for our redemption. His blood needed to be shed just as the blood of perfect animals needed to be shed under the old covenant. Read the book of Hebrews. It lays this out very clearly as to what needed to happen and why it had to be in the form of a fully God, fully human being, Jesus of Nazareth, who fulfilled the law perfectly. I don't know. I mean, you know, would an AI even have a soul? I say no because...
No, and you know what I've said about it before. If you've read anything I've written or listened to me talk much about it, I believe that they will provide a fit extension for a presence. And so they may appear to have consciousness. They may appear to have a soul. But I think what we're seeing is that there's a move in society that's being shaped by media that is taking advantage of the heart that God put in us, this desire to that creatures be treated fairly. And I speak of the video that was put out a few days ago of the robot dog developed by Boston Dynamics, I think, that was being kicked. And there were a lot of people commenting to this video on various sites where it was posted saying that they were very uncomfortable seeing this robot being kicked because it doesn't fall over.
Right.
The whole point of kicking it was that it could recover.
Yeah.
So if it's out in the battlefield or working in your warehouse, if something happens, it won't lose the footing. It won't drop the books it's carrying, whatever. they were disturbed by this. I found it a little disturbing because it did have sort of a dog-like appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And we tend to feel really sorry for something that looks like it's being abused.
Right.
So the question is now going around the internet sites, is this indeed abuse? And if so, and an artificial intelligence is arising somewhere in the world, by kicking its little friends,
yes,
are we going to make it mad?
And
I think that's something you should ask Zoltan when you talk to him on Sunday.
Well, absolutely. And also, that begs another question. This refers back to something we had talked about a couple of months ago, the Rocco's Basilisk.
Yes.
Kind of a thought experiment that developed out of a thread at, and where was the website? We first stumbled onto this at an article, I think, at Slate.com.
Yeah, it is at Slate.
But there was a, the discussion board Less Wrong, which is, purports to be a website for rational thinkers. Somebody proposed, raised this question. If an artificial intelligence could someday be developed that was so advanced that it would figure out how to travel through time, would it go back in time in order to manipulate the lives of humans, especially those who are related to the development of AI, in order to guarantee its existence?
Mm-hmm.
And if we were, and are we leading to the ultimate creation of such an artificial intelligence by simply posting questions about it and discussing it on the internet in a forum where presumably it is going to be archived for such a long time that this AI could wake up, begin reading about itself and see who was writing about it back then,
uh-huh,
and what positions they took on the issue so that they could eliminate those that were opposed to the development of such an AI. And the guys at Less Wrong, including the creator of the board, Eliezer Yudkowsky, who's considered a brilliant man, was so upset about the possibility that this might actually happen that he deleted the thread. When it was started again, he deleted it again. When it started again, he basically deleted it and then made it very clear in a posting to the board that this is a topic that shall never, ever be discussed. Are you idiots?
He's terrified by discussing it because if somehow the future AI comes back, he might be eliminated?
Exactly. Exactly. That by simply discussing it, we are increasing the likelihood that such an AI would be created and come back to destroy us.
Here's the thing. Does this in some way dovetail into the Slenderman thing, the idea of a tulpa? The more you discuss something, the more likely it is to arise and gain momentum and eventually gain sentience. And it gets back into this idea that we create the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something in there are things in the occult world that if you say the right words and you think the right things and you believe the right stuff, that you can make it happen. It's the same idea of we all watched, well, at least those my age, watched Peter Pan, Mary Martin playing Peter mm-hmm. Pan when I was a kid. And we'd always get to that point where Tinkerbell was dying.
Right.
And it's in every, version of this story. Oh, do you believe in her? She's going to die because nobody believes in fairies anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's this idea that let's get a massive amount of people believing in something and it will shift and make it happen.
Yeah, and we saw that in that episode of Doctor Who that
everybody's saying doctor.
Right, the 10th doctor and everybody at the same time thinking doctor, doctor, and suddenly he's reborn.
Exactly. There must be something to that in the metaverse that can take on reality if indeed we shape it enough. There was a great episode of The X-Files that we've talked about a few times with the trash monster.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the neighborhood where the guy that ran it, he hated anybody that was messing up the rules and made the community look less than perfect.
That's right.
And so his id, as in the wonderful sci-fi movie with Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, Forbidden Planet.
Forbidden Planet.
I'm powerless to stop it.
This id would take over and created this id monster. And in this episode, it was a trash
made
monster.
Of trash. Yeah, they were trying to figure out what's banana peels and coffee grounds. So lived all over the. What the heck is this?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but you just don't violate the deed restrictions when you buy in that neighborhood. Let me tell you. But this is an interesting thought experiment that was proposed at Less Wrong, and it's because and you can look this up. Google mm-hmm. Rocco, R-O-K-O, Rocco's basilisk. And you'll see how there are very intelligent people who lose sleep at night thinking about this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if time travel were available, and this is something that's been the genesis of many science fiction stories, would you go back and, say, kill Hitler? Would you go back and try to stop the assassination of John F. Kennedy? Things like that. Take it a step further. If you were a malevolent artificial intelligence, say Skynet, would you go back in history, like the Terminators, and try to eliminate those who opposed your creation? And the next part of this thought experiment was, are we contributing to the rise of this malevolent AI? Am I putting my own life at risk by even writing about this? And there are people who start angsting about the promotion I didn't get. I wonder if that was because this AI is manipulating things behind the scenes to ruin my career.
Good grief!
It sounds crazy to us, but again, we're starting with a different foundation for our worldview than these people are.
Yeah.
And because they have built their worldview on shifting sand, you know, they're being swayed about, knocked off their foundation,
yeah.
and their houses are collapsing, apparently. Again, it sounds nuts, but these are not stupid people. These are not evil people. They just don't have the blessed assurance of knowing where that their future is secure. And it is really tragic when you start here. And, you know, just like the tragedy of Dr. Ray Kurzweil, who is trying to, or the folks at the TerraSim Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Send us your DNA. We'll hold it and we'll keep it safe and preserved until such time as technology catches up and we can grow a clone of you. And then we'll take the mind file that you've created here on our servers and program this homunculus with your mind. And so you'll live forever.
Like,
that is so tragic. Sad.
Well, we're going to do a left turn here because
yeah.
I've got to go to a story that I told you earlier today reminded me so much of one of my favorite TV shows, and that is The Prisoner. Remember Rover from The Prisoner?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, this story is all about how DARPA is developing war spheres.
Hmm.
It's a black robotic sphere that is capable of carrying a bomb. It will keep up with you no matter what the terrain, mud, snow, water. It'll keep up with you. And you can stabilize it in 9 different ways. It has its own propulsion system, which is pendulum motion.
Huh.
The bot moves forward by shifting the center of gravity back and forth. It's got its own Segway. Built in. And apparently that the company that has created it is GuardBot Inc. And this is called the GuardBot. So it's going to be going out into the field with our Marines.
Huh. I mean, it sounds like a great idea.
Here it is. I'm turning my computer so you can see it. There it
right,
is on the ocean.
And that little picture does remind you of the iconic picture of Rover coming out of the ocean in the Prisoner series to chase down whoever tried to get off the village, get away
yeah,
from the village.
Exactly.
That's only a step removed, though, from autonomous robots. And there are, you know, groups out there that are beginning to recognize the threat. In fact, I subscribe
to... Which is why I bring it up.
Yeah. Autonomous killer robots are a bad idea.
Now, picture all the robots. They're all over the place. The robots of today are not just, you know, we've got these almost robotic-looking arms that hold our microphones up, and that's how the old industrialized robots were, and they're
yeah,
still in use
mm-hmm,
in places, but many of them now are autonomous. They just have their little jobs programmed, and they use GPS to figure out where they are, and they roam around. Amazon uses them in many of their warehouses now. They just go and they pull stuff off a shelf. They take it over to the guy who's packing it up, or maybe they even pack it up themselves. They are all over the place. Now, picture interconnected robots
mm-hmm,
that are being controlled and directed by an AI or a group of AIs.
Yes. And I've not seen this movie, but I see Gons in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/PID radio reference the movie Chappie. I guess we're going to have to watch this for research purposes.
Gons, you are just so way ahead of us.
Yeah.
Gons, get in here. Just call in.
The conversation in the chat room is a lot more interesting than what we're putting out here.
It always is.
Yeah. That's why it's so distracting, because I keep reading this stuff. It's like, oh, yeah, that's a great point. I wish you – what? What did you – but you're right. If you get these global globally aware artificial intelligence that's And we saw an example of this, what that might be like, in the movie Eagle Eye.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We made reference to, where the Homeland Security computer called ARIA is tied into CCTV. It's tied into traffic lights. It's tied into train switching equipment. It's everything.
Well, and if you are if you have wearables that are internet connected,
right.
It could tie into anything. Say we were looking at glasses earlier today for $79.95 that have cameras built in that can
sold by an online shopping channel.
For $79.95. I'll do that car for whatever.
And we talked about, we talked about the Google glasses with the HD camera plugged in and running through NSA servers.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's crazy the way the world is going. And now picture this AI running everything and running amok and taking over because it is connected to the Department of Homeland Security, which brings us to President Obama's changes of the internet.
Yeah, there was that. I was also going to talk very, very briefly about the minority report.
Let's get to that in a second because all that's going to feed in. Let's just go ahead and make the claim that the DHS is being put in charge of collecting data.
Yeah.
NSA, you're out. DHS, you're in.
Yeah, this was really a surprise because, I thought, and maybe this is part of a turf war.
I think it's a turf war.
Because the FCC was getting ready to there were clues coming out of Washington that the Federal Communications Commission was going to start regulating the internet like it regulates telephone lines.
Yeah.
As though it were a public utility.
Well, I think it may still do that because President Obama is saying that the new changes will bring in multi-millions, tens of millions of taxes, of taxes.
Yeah.
So the word is that the internet will be taxed, it will be slower, we'll be frustrated, and the DHS will be spying on everybody.
So now this was the brand new executive order on cybersecurity. Is that what you're referring to?
I think so. And President Obama has just gone to Silicon Valley either yesterday or today to talk to the big movers and shakers. And the biggest movers and shakers, Apple, Google, and I believe Yahoo, said, no, we're not going. You can invite us, but we're not going to be there.
So this was the forum at Stanford University where he issued the cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Executive order today. Just as we are all connected like never before, we have to work together like never before, both to seize opportunities and to meet the challenges of this information age. This was yesterday at the Cybersecurity and Communication or Consumer Protection Summit at Stanford. So DHS is going to take over responsibility for cybersecurity.
Well, that's what we're being told now. Now, how it all shakes out when those with a lot of power and lobbying efforts are able to get in there and make changes, I don't know.
Mm. Well, the internet to this day, it hasn't been perfect, but for the most part,
it's been pretty free.
Yeah, it has been pretty free. And this whole issue of net neutrality, because of the doublespeak that's being used and because of, the fact that politicians and lobbyists are liable to just flat out lie about what these things mean, it's been really tough to get a handle on what this actually entails. But basically, I think it boils down to this. When the government, the president, or anyone in the administration says net neutrality, what they really mean is the FCC takes over and begins regulating it like they regulate the phone company, which, as you say, probably means we're going to start paying taxes to use it, and it's going to be slower,
exactly,
more than likely.
And it will probably eliminate a lot of the small companies that are doing this now.
Right.
It will be focused into just one or two or three main providers, my guess is.
But the cybersecurity executive order issued yesterday, the Department of Homeland Security would serve as the clearinghouse, the hub between the government and tech companies that are sharing security data so that the Homeland Security Department would get their hands on everything. And again, would likely mean that they would require back doors into various internet companies' networks in order to access things and make sure that everything is
exactly
safe
and isn't
secure.
It odd that you and I had to install just a tiny, tiny little patch this morning?
Yeah,
and because it was installed. Once again, it took us like four or five restarts to get back on the internet.
Yeah, interesting.
I've always wondered what's in all those little patches.
Yeah, just coincidence, I'm sure.
I'm sure it was nothing. So been with me the whole time.
Yeah. Patricia Langer. Joking, of course, as I say this, but perhaps our only secure means of meeting from here on out will be to learn how to remote view so we can meet in another virtual reality. But again, I reiterate, she is just kidding about that.
Oh, I know she is.
Yeah.
Well, we can do this because, according to research, we are all growing like a giant brain. I talked about it earlier, that this idea that dark matter and all of the interconnectedness within the universe makes it appear that everything is connected more than just the way scientists can perceive it. Quantum mechanics indicates there may be dark matter out there. Well, someone has just come out and said that the structure of the universe is like a giant brain.
I see.
Natural growth dynamics are the same for different real networks like the internet or the brain or social networks. So the idea that social networks, the internet, they are growing the same way a giant brain would, which gets us back to this whole idea of sentience.
The noosphere and eventually the cosmos waking up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And again, that's where the New Age thinks we're going. And sadly, this thinking has apparently infiltrated the Roman Catholic Church, which is the largest nominally Christian denomination in the world. But there are liberal Christian denominations that are also going in that direction. There are New Age practices that have been entered into quite a few churches. I mean, my goodness, just you want to stir up a fight at a church? Tell them they shouldn't be hosting the weekly yoga class.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, boy.
Well, you know, to be fair, I think most people assume it's just exercise.
Yeah, I think
but,
you're right.
You know, you're going to have to be accountable to that if the Lord says, no, it wasn't just exercise. You were doing the following things that were, you know, not in my name.
Yeah.
It's up to us to take a look at these things and see what it really entails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I think we as Christians, you know, shifting back to politics for a minute, need to lighten up a little bit about the National Prayer Breakfast. Let's understand that the National Prayer Breakfast was founded by a group called The Family.
Yeah.
And look up the interview that I did at View from the Bunker with Jeff Charlotte, Sharlett, about his book, The Family. Dominionist idea that, you know, we should take over the world and that we as Christians need to establish infrastructure in various nations, make partnerships with world leaders who are, you know, clearly not living Christian lifestyle for the purpose of advancing the kingdom of God. But, you know, in an outward sense. In other words, we're only looking at the externals. We want people to live the right way, obey the right laws. We don't really care what they believe as long as they're not marrying persons of the opposite sex or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
That does not please God in the least, but that is essentially what the family is all about, sort of a pharisaical view of morality.
Yeah.
But willing to be pragmatic in whom with whom they will partner in order to achieve their goal of dominion.
What was the address of the one house where many within the family would live in Washington?
It was on C Street, as I recall.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, that's who founded the National Prayer Breakfast. It is not, I would argue, a Christian.
When you hear the word prayer, it doesn't mean praying to.
Yeah.
Jehovah.
Right, right.
Some people pray and they're actually agnostics or atheists. They just believe that somehow this idea of good vibes coming your way.
Yeah, the older I get, the less comfortable I get, the more squeamish I get when I hear people say, I'm sending good thoughts your way for, well, okay, I appreciate that, but what do you mean by that? You're sending good thoughts. What does that mean?
Yeah.
I send good thoughts to the Chicago Cubs every year. They still haven't won the World Series.
You got to do the little dance, honey.
But the prayer breakfast featured some comments by President Obama, which illustrates how either disingenuous or ignorant the man is about religion and about history.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he got up on his high horse and said, "Don't you get on your high horse, you Christians, because we had the Crusades and the Inquisition."
Well, in context, he actually includes himself.
Well, okay,
it
true.
Like he's saying we.
Yeah. But by saying we, he's basically, you know, scolding Christians who are saying, you know, look, they just beheaded this guy and they burned the Jordanian pilot in a cage, burned him alive. That's barbaric. Well, yes, but we had the Crusades. Well, look, if you've got to go back 500 or 1,000 years to find examples of Barbara. Like, wait a minute. Doesn't that mean that we win? I mean, you know, on the morality scale here? I mean, not,
well,
I'm
excuse
being
me,
somewhat
but what
facetious.
You're saying is that was wrong in the Crusades. Well, it's wrong now.
Exactly. And the point is that we quit doing it 500 years ago.
Yeah.
And 1,000 years ago. And they're still doing it today.
Yeah.
By the way, is there still human trafficking going on in the world? Yeah, generally in Muslim nations. So there was a real weird equivocation that the president brought out in this little scold for Christians. And then the Dalai Lama was there. And, of course, he got better reviews from the president than Christians or Muslims did. And the Dalai Lama, you know, he's got this reputation of being this peace-loving, gentle soul, but he practices a brand of tantric Buddhism that has a really violent eschatology in which the Buddhists rise up and slaughter all the Hindus, Jews, Christians, and Muslims. So when you see Buddhist priests come to your town and they put those little sand mandalas down.
I always think of that very thing that happened in Colombia.
It did. And they dumped it into, was it the Missouri River? It was a tributary of the Missouri River.
It was a little creek that ran on campus. There was a tributary, I think.
Yeah.
And they build these big sand mandalas, which are really, they're occultic. I mean,
magical workings. Invoking their
and
gods.
And then they take the sand that right. was used to create it and they dump it into a local body of water.
Right. Sweep it all up and then dump it into a body of water. And I am certainly no expert on Buddhist theology, but I've done a little reading several years back about this. Dave Emery, and his For the Record program, did a number of programs about this. That basically they do their magical working, invoking their gods, and then they sweep the material into which the gods have been called and dump it in the river so as to spread the power of the Buddhist gods over the territory.
It made me very uncomfortable when they were in that town.
Yeah. So, Patricia Longer, here he did it in Lake Ontario, water spirits. And they've been doing it all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not just Columbia, Missouri was, you know, picked out for some special reason. It's just one more city in which this has been done. And most of us in the West are so ignorant about this. We just don't know anything about it. And again, self-included, not very well informed about Buddhist theology. But we just think this is quaint. This is beautiful. It's spiritual. And so it's good. It's nice. It's peaceful. Well, it's really not. Really, these guys are just very peacefully going around and doing their magical workings, waiting for the day when their gods return and you know, wreak havoc mm-hmm. on all of us. I don't pay that much attention to the National Prayer Breakfast because it seems every year, especially when it's a Democratic president in office, we Christians will get all huffy and offended about it. But yeah, what do you expect? I mean, it's for show. It's for the congressmen to go and show the constituents back
home. Just remember, the world is controlled by entities that are at war with God.
Yeah. Yeah, and presumably at war with each other, too.
Yeah, but, I think so.
Yeah. So anyway, it was I just wanted to throw in that little comment there about that. But you want to talk a little more geopolitics? Because we've got some interesting things going on in Ukraine and
the
Middle East.
Well, I want to, before we leave the Middle East, what is the deal going on with Al-Sisi?
Yeah, interesting development here over the last few days. A satellite channel that is tied to based in Turkey, that's tied to the Muslim Brotherhood released a recording, or what they claim is a recording, of Egyptian President Abdel al-Sisi and two high-ranking Egyptian officials. And the phone recordings, which took place allegedly early last year, 2014, when he was the defense minister, not the president,
right,
were very critical of
Saudi Arabia
and other Gulf states that are sending a lot of money to Egypt to help support the government and the country there. This TV station suggested that these recordings would damage the relationship between al-Sisi and Saudi. And we should point out that al-Sisi came to power in an uprising that forced the Muslim Brotherhood out of office and deposed the president, Mohamed Morsi, who was the elected president.
Exactly.
Morsi was elected after, of course, the United States supported the Muslim uprising, the Arab Spring uprising in Egypt. Which
ran out in Mubarak.
That's right. So this Muslim Brotherhood-connected TV station in Turkey releases these tapes to try to drive a wedge between Egypt and Saudi Arabia. The day after these recordings hit the air, Gulf leaders like King Salman, said that his support of Egypt is unchangeable. And in fact, they went to the extent of releasing all Egyptian prisoners in Saudi jails.
Yes. Said, Egypt is like a second home to me.
Mm-hmm.
I love Egypt. I love El-Sisi.
Yeah. And it's interesting, the dynamic in the Middle East. As I understand it, and, you know, bear in mind, I'm not an expert here, but this is, as I understand it, you know, Saudi Arabia is recognized as the predominant Sunni power in the Middle East. But Egypt, because of the long history of in Egypt, the long cultural history, I mean, Egypt was one of the original societies on planet Earth. It carries an influence among the Arab states and the Islamic states that it might not otherwise, because Egypt does not have the economic power that Saudi Arabia does. It doesn't have the money or the oil behind it, but it does have that street cred, for lack of a better term.
It also controls a very important shipping
lane. Well, right. And of course the Suez Canal, which is key. So, yeah, interesting stuff.
Now, but what's more interesting is that supposedly, according to the article that we read, and I think it was at Breitbart, is that there's insider information that it was the U.S. intelligence services that they recorded the conversation and turned it over to the Muslim Brotherhood.
That's right. That's right. That is really interesting because it just raises a big, you know, to use language of the street, whiskey tango foxtrot. What are we doing? What is the point of backing the Muslim Brotherhood?
Now, Sam's shocked. He goes, what?
Dad. Why would we support the Muslim Brotherhood, a radical group?
I really don't understand.
I do not.
We're trying to back every side.
I don't know. I mean, we've got wheels within wheels. What's the word? You know, the JFK movie. I'm thinking Joe Pesci's character, David Ferry.
A mystery wrapped in an enigma, wrapped in a
A conundrum. Yeah, I think he was quoting Winston Churchill. But that's what you've got. You've got layers of an onion here. And no matter how you slice it, it makes you cry. Because you just don't see any good end coming out of this. You've got groups within the various sects of Islam. Because the Saudi royal family and the Muslim Brotherhood are both Sunni organizations. And the Muslim Brotherhood originated now I'm going to do some history on that, some reading of history on this. Did it come out of Saudi Arabia or Egypt after World War II?
I was thinking it started in Egypt, but we'll have to look that up.
But Nasser drove them out in the 50s, I think. Anyway, that's what I get for opening my mouth without being prepared. the Muslim Brotherhood, thank you. Happy Valentine's Day, sweetheart. The Muslim Brotherhood is the wellspring from which comes Al-Qaeda and Hamas and Fatah and other organizations. Why did we just when it seems like Egypt is getting some stability back, and it did so because the army basically stepped in and said, enough of this Muslim Brotherhood stuff. And that's how El-Sisi came to power. You know, as the former defense minister, he had enough backing from the military to take over the government, essentially. That's the way governments in the Middle East are run, stable governments. You basically have to have a strong man at the top dictating the way things are going to go. Every dictator that we, the United States, have helped push out of office, Gaddafi, Mubarak, Saddam Hussein, has resulted in a power vacuum that has led to years of civil war and lots of innocent people getting killed.
Isn't it interesting, though? This is so true. But isn't it interesting when you look at the long view of history, how there's a turf war going on in that whole area? And I think it goes back to a spiritual turf war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God promised to Abraham a large swath of that whole area. And it seems to be that local indigenous demons or under the control of fallen angels who've been given authority by God, perhaps, that there is infighting taking place. And you know, the first world nations of the globe, especially the United States, we want everything. You know, our nation is trying to essentially turn the world over into a massive shopping area, resort area, a business safe zone for U.S. companies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the demise, in many cases, of the people who already live there.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, and it's not just oil. I think it's way more than oil in the Middle East. I think it has to do with ancient territories and the fact that God promised that land.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, and I've been doing some reading on this today because I've been trying to understand some of the presuppositions behind various positions of Bible prophecy, pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib. You know, what are the presuppositions we have to make in order to interpret Scripture to support a certain, you know, these various interpretations of the prophetic timeline.
Right.
And one of the key things is, you know, the land promise to Abraham. You know, how much land does it encompass? And was it fulfilled? Because when we read the description of the territory that was under the control of King Solomon, that you could make the case that the land promise has already been fulfilled. But most people don't,
yes,
don't
but
accept
there's,
that.
There's no closure to that contract. It doesn't say once it's fulfilled, then, you know, if you lose it, then tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, that's why I'm still doing this reading, to kind of get a better handle on that, because there are different people, and intelligent people, who interpret these things different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, Egypt was the home of the Muslim Brotherhood, founded March 1928 by Hassan Albana.
Albano?
Yeah. No, B-A-N-N-A, not Bono.
Banana.
Yeah. And then in 1948, after the several bombings and assassination attempts, the government arrested 32 leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood and banned the organization. In fact, they had been banned through most of the Mubarak years.
Hmm.
And they really, you know, the reason they came to power after Mubarak was pushed out was because they had the best organization on the ground.
So clearly the Muslim Brotherhood does not like al-Sisi.
Right. Because he basically
like them.
ran them out of power just, you know, as Mubarak. And before him, Anwar Sadat kept them under the thumb, because they presented a clear and present danger to the Sadat and Mubarak, you know, dynasties, their power.
Hmm.
So, but they
sorry,
had,
you said dynasty, and I suddenly thought of women wearing really shoulder
Alexis
pads Carrington, out to
yeah,
here.
Joan Collins, yeah, no. So anyway, yeah, that is a real interesting thing, and especially again, if it's true that it was American intelligence assets that gave the Muslim Brotherhood these recordings, why would we try to sabotage the relationship between the Saudis and Egypt? Because both of those nations are allegedly our allies.
Trying to look at the time here.
Yeah.
I'm squinting.
So,
is it 4:52?
It is 4:52. We're just not having any trouble filling the time today.
We're not. And as we were going into it, I thought, what are we going to talk
about?
Yeah.
Now, prophetically, again, what does this mean in terms of where it is going to, you know, how things play out? Thank you for the comment in the chat room there, Brett. I'll have to look up Dennis Cuddy and his writings. In fact,
oh gosh, I used to read his stuff.
He's been suggested as a guest on View from the Bunker for quite some time.
Well, we will be inviting guests not only on PID Radio, but also to be your guests on future episodes of Skywatch TV.
Yes, so
you
we'll
and
be,
Gary Stearman and.
Looking forward to doing that, whether it's through the news updates or the longer form program.
Yeah.
And you know, Gary Stearman is the host of that.
He is the anchor.
This is something we're really looking forward to as we prepare for our move to Crane, Missouri.
2 weeks from today, we will be in Crane.
Yep,
and, 2 weeks
On site. And I know that Tom Horn has been anxious for us to get there, and we're just even more anxious than he is to get there. My daily travel for my current employer, and I'm still technically employed by I'll name it O'Neill Steel,
great company, by the way. They've been very good to us.
They have. I've given them more than a 2 months' notice that this was coming, because they have treated us extremely well.
Extremely well. In fact, it was your boss, your immediate boss up the chain, who said, "Look, we owe you the vacation. Take it."
Yeah, yeah. So thank you, Paul, for that. So anyway, looking forward to getting to Crane and getting on site, so we can start doing this on a daily basis and paying more attention to things. So that,
and by this PID radio, also we're going to try to do more PID radios,
yeah,
more live ones. So we're not really sure what the schedule will be. We need to talk to our new boss about that. So we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that would be really awesome to do this a couple hours a day. You know, like back in the day when I was doing it every day.
Yeah, well,
but doing it together, that would be the really awesome
PID
thing.
PID radio been with me the whole
been
time.
Been with me the whole time, yeah. Just one final thing I want to throw out there, because, again, this is, you know, it falls under the category of wars and rumors of war, and the fact that the United States is just, we're in the business of warfare and welfare, apparently. That was the words of a guest I just interviewed the other night, Mark Goodwin, from the Prepper Recon podcast. Of course, the president has gone to Congress to ask for authorization to send a military force, U.S. troops, into battle against ISIS, against the Islamic State, which puts our soldiers back in Iraq. And we kind of saw this coming. We never really actually left all the way. And now we've got 3,000 advisors there. Now we're going to put military forces there.
Yes.
The resolution authorizing the use of military force, according to the analysts I've read, said, you know, it uses words like limited, and it puts a sunset clause on it. 3 years down the road, it would have to be reauthorized by Congress. But the reality is this gives President Obama and whoever his successor is the carte blanche to do really whatever they want.
Yes.
For a couple of reasons. First, you can say these guys are just there for defensive purposes, but it doesn't take a lot to say, oh, our guys were fired on, so we need to start shooting back and turn it into an offensive operation. Of course, we've turned the art of offensive war as a preemptive defense.
Yeah.
You know, the best defense is to hit them first. So we you know, again, we can interpret this very loosely.
Well, we have massive assets there as well. We have a 25 square mile base that was attacked yesterday, and we have a very large embassy
here. Yeah. So, and the three-year reauthorization sunset clause, 3 years down the line, if our troops are heavily engaged in Iraq, no Congress is going to vote to withdraw funding and say, nope, got to bring the boys home now. They'll keep it going.
Yep.
So that, expect to see us back in Iraq and Syria for quite some time in the future. And Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma this week, introduced a bill into the U.S. Senate calling for lethal armaments to be supplied to Ukraine to defend Ukraine against Russian-backed separatists. And the interesting thing is he used photos that had been supplied to him, he says, by members of the Ukrainian parliament that showed Russian forces invading Ukraine, except that certain eagle-eyed news analysts looked at those photos closely and said, these are from the war between Russia and Georgia in 2009. So there's some question about, but, you know, Senator Inhofe responded and said he was furious at being taken advantage of, but there's still plenty of evidence to show Russian involvement in Ukraine, and so we should send lethal weapons to Ukraine anyway. Keep an eye on that situation, because if NATO gets pulled into that war, then the United States, because of our NATO commitments, presumably would have to honor those commitments, and we could be drawn into a shooting war with, if the Russians are really there, with Russia.
Yes.
So, wars and rumors of war, but that's just one of the many things we were told to watch out for by our Lord and Savior. Come quickly, Lord Jesus.
Amen to that.
Yeah. Well, Mark.
Tomorrow, fellowship?
Oh, yes.
10:30 Central Time?
Yeah, that's GMT or UTC minus 6, however you want to backdate that. But 10:30 a.m., so Australia time, that would be, what, about 12:30 in the morning? Something like that.
Don't ask me.
Maybe not quite that. Maybe 11:30 at night. I'm not sure. Go from Greenwich Mean Time and then add whatever, but we're minus 6, and that's when we'll start. We start with chapter 32 of Genesis, Jacob returning to Canaan and meeting his brother Esau, and you know, things that followed thereafter.
And you have a VFTB going up this week, or is it next week?
Nope, you got two lit up for this week.
Ooh,
yeah, Mark Goodwin of the Prepper Podcast talking about a novel called The Days of Noah, and then on Wednesday of this week, Zoltan Istvan discussing religion and artificial intelligence. We'll probably also talk about his candidacy for president on the Transhumanist Party ticket.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it is a strange and wonderful world in which we live, and I'll say again, come quickly, Lord Jesus. Until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out.